Cameron Boozer was the hardest scout that he's ever had in his career.
I will say, I think that a lot of people were jumping on the flash of Wilson. I just kind of think a lot of that, though, was clutch buzz. I think that's a huge part of it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, there's been a couple of notes going around about all of the debt and unsustainable spending in college athletics. And there were a couple of notes that I wanted to bring up. Stuart Mandel has made one over on the Everything app. Let's talk about that when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim. Over at ESPN, Pete Thamel has a column. Byline from Rancho Palos Verdes, California. More on that in just a second. He's at Big Ten spring meetings. Few industries embrace buzzwords the way college athletics does, which is why, with the spring sports coming to a close, the impending offseason is destined to be remembered as the moment of the alleged, quote, unsustainable, end quote, spending. From Washington Athletic Director Pat Chun to Michigan State Athletic Director Jay Bratt to Colorado coach Deion Sanders, unsustainable has become the decree of the recent months. Heck, everyone from Charles Barkley to Ted Cruz to Nick Saban has dropped the U word. The place where unsustainable meets thriving is the Big Ten, which is hosting its spring conference meetings in Southern California this weekend. The ongoing paradox of college sports, high ratings and loud complaining, $5 million plus deals for players countered by concerns about how to pay them, met with the conference's championship realities. So this, I think, is the question that for sure Pete is getting at, but I'm curious to know. Where's the evidence of unsustainability?
Hasn't come yet. But
so Stuart Mandel also,
yeah, I was
quote,
gonna say, did you get to the Stuart Mandel?
Stuart Mandel quote tweeted the resort that they are staying at, which I'm pretty sure that's also where the Trump Golf Course is, which is one of the most expensive daily fee courses in the United States of America. The average rate for a room right now is around $738. If you want to go in June, you can get a room for about on June 1st, you can get a room for $2,064. They must have a big conference there then. I guess that's not Memorial Day, because this is Memorial Day. Yeah, you can go this weekend on Friday for $565, $804, $639 if you want to go Memorial Day weekend. So only about $2,000 to stay. That's for the base room. I think that's the question. It's like, why do they keep hammering this message when none of their spending habits reflect somebody who is broke? I also saw this earlier today. This is from Anthony Bradley. Clemson is a $1.5 billion in debt. Syracuse is closing or pausing 93 programs. UNC Chapel Hill plans to cut spending by $89 million over 3 years. Still have found a way to give a basketball coach $12 million a year. Duke recently let 600 employees go in a $350 million budget cut. Indiana Public Colleges announced a plan to eliminate or merge 580 programs statewide. So they are getting the message out that we are cutting spending, but it certainly doesn't seem to stop athletics. So I'm not really sure where the actual concern is. It seems to me like most of what they're trying to do is usher in legislation, but then the news of yesterday was, while Ted Cruz's Senate bill was getting bipartisan legislation, the House bill was going to be removed from the floor. So they'll continue to do this dance of the politicians who continue to do the dance of keeping the people that are funding their campaigns that say this is a big deal, they'll continue to pretend like they care when in reality it feels like they're just never going to address it.
Sounds about right.
I guess that's kind of the other question. It's like, where is it headed?
I mean, there is a. I do agree that there is clearly some unsustainable aspects to this at some point, right? The money spigot is going to stop, you would think.
No, I think in general, if you asked me to say where I would put my belief, I think I would say is I think it's a house with a bad foundation, but it's not crumbling now.
No, it is not. Especially amongst the, I mean, give me a break, Big Ten, right? Like you and the SEC, there's no.
They just made 1 point. What was it, George? 3 billion last. What was that announced? Yeah, 1.3 billion.
So I'm not too worried about how they're doing these days.
I almost wonder if we're now reaching the point, and like the inevitable is just the case. Like, with as much as the SEC and the Big Ten, like, they can't agree on a playoff format, I just almost wonder if, like, the fact that they can't get anything done, like, is this just leading to them finally going, all right, we're just doing it on our own? And then they can make up their own rules. Because I still think that's what's interesting, is that people are way more quick to sue the NCAA than they are to sue their own school, like their own institution, their own conference. And a lot of times the policy that ends up getting upheld is the conference policy.
I'm curious about how this playoff thing.
So the question for me will be, how long can the SEC stand firm? Because if the SEC can stand firm, like when everyone goes, well, it's 9-1, the reality is it's 1-1. And Topmeyer made this point last week. This time last year, it was 9-1 in favor of the SEC. And then it flipped in a calendar year. While I don't think it'll flip back, I mean, who's to say that it won't? And the other thing that's also interesting is that Topmeyer and I talked about this. The fact that Greg Sankey is pretty firm on expanding to no more than 16, meanwhile, all of his conference coaches and ADs are talking about 24, 24, 24. It suggests that probably the SEC presidents also agree with Sankey. And so if they're going to, I don't see them changing their minds quickly.
So does that mean we just keep kicking the can down the road on 12 teams?
So I think that means we will have 12 teams through what the end of this deal is at 31.
Is it every year they have the ability to kind of tear it up?
They have the ability to tear it up. But what's actually happening is what I've been screaming about for, I feel like, 3 years. This is actually just a cold war between ESPN and Fox. Yeah, Fox wants expansion because they want to bid on it. And ESPN, who owns complete control of it, they don't want to give that up. And so then if you bring it to 24, they're going to have to give it up. So what I actually think is happening is we're watching in real time. People are using proxies. But really what we're just watching is a negotiation between ESPN and Fox. Because I can tell you this, if ESPN changes his mind and says, let's go to 24, the SEC is going to do it. But they don't want to do that.
How much does the SEC want to hold on to the SEC championship as well?
I think it is a consideration. I don't think it's the primary. I think what ESPN's desire is the primary consideration. But I also think that that is, there's another way to look at it if you're also ESPN. That game is included in what they pay the league. If we go to 24 and we eliminate that championship game, well, now all of a sudden you just lost a game that is a standalone game that makes a ton of money. And then furthermore, now you're having to open it up for games that are costing about $100 million or more a piece.
And if we go to 24, and maybe Topmeyer would know more about this, is there, I don't know. So ESPN has the rights, both television and radio, to the entire college football playoff.
Correct.
Now they,
they can sublicense it, but they own the rights. Like
they, yeah, they traded them off. They made some money back with TNT doing two of the games. If it goes to 24, do we go to the renegotiation table for those new playoff games? Is that where Fox thinks they can sneak in and grab some of them? Like, that's what I don't know. Is that the reason that ESPN is against it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Makes all the sense in the world.
I can't tell you the specifics of why, if it goes to 16, ESPN controls it versus if it goes to 24, it would be brought to market. But that's the reason they want 24 is to go to market.
Right.
Because that triggers something that causes it to go to market.
So what surprises me a little bit, and maybe it's because the ACC isn't thrilled with their current deal, the ACC's on board now, right?
I mean, and ACC, Jim Phillips, even at their spring meetings, was basically like, the only reason why this thing isn't going to 16 is because ESPN doesn't want it.
So they haven't been happy about their deal for a long time.
I also think that I took the comments a little differently. I took the comments from Jim Phillips as an acknowledgement, like, this conference only exists in its current form till 2030. Because that's when everybody can basically pay to get out. And they can pay a reasonable...
No. Jim Phillips told me it's never been healthier.
Yeah, no, totally. That's what I took it as.
Now, full disclosure, as I like to say, Notre Dame fan here. Did you see a couple of the columns that came out of the ACC meetings? How it was like, there's no benefit to Notre Dame. They should tell them to go pound sand.
Well, I think I take this all as the same thing. Like, most of those columns are going to get written by people that sources are ACC people. I think forever.
They're ACC coaches.
Yeah, but I also think for a while, the ACC held out hope that if Notre Dame ever had to join a conference, they would join with them. They now know that that ship has sailed.
So Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame, was like, I was down there. I talked to a bunch of people, bunch of presidents. He's like, no one thinks that. It's Pat Narduzzi. It's a couple disgruntled coaches. And the reality is, if Notre Dame said, all right, we're good, how is that helping your conference?
I guess if you...
I think 7 or 8, I looked it up. Since the last 5 or 6 years, College Game Day has gone, when College Game Day has included an ACC game, I think it's like 40 or 50% of them were Notre Dame involved.
So I think the argument from their perspective, because as you point out, a lot of it comes from coaches.
Oh, the coaches hate it.
Right, because it's just losses. I think in their mind, it's like, it seems to me it's very obvious. There's this clear line of demarcation. Coaches just want whatever helps them make a playoff because they think that gives them security, which I would still argue the more you water it down, the less of an accomplishment it is and the more likely that it's not going to give you security. Because I can tell you this, in a 2014 playoff, if Ryan Day loses back-to-back first rounds,
adios.
See ya. Well, I mean, look at what just happened. Look, this was Topmeyer's point. Look what just happened to North Carolina basketball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were a 3 seed and lost their best player.
And then on top of that, they lost in the first round.
Oh, 6 seed. Sorry, 6 seed.
But, I mean, they were going to be a 3 seed until he got hurt, or maybe a 4 seed. But then they get bounced in the first round after they got bounced in the first round last year, and he's gone. Like, I don't think that it offers them the stability that they believe.
No, I don't think so. I think I understand. once the Big Ten, because remember last summer when the Big Ten put out that ridiculous like 24 teams.
It was a soccer formation. Remember we called it? It had a bunch of numbers.
Five auto bids, blah, 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 blah. And now, once Petiti was like, all right, 24, five auto bids, 19 at larges, that's where you got the Big 12 being like, oh, yes, please. ACC, same thing, because it's more money. It's more money for their conference. So that makes all the sense in the world for them to be on board with that now.
I mean,
but the irony is it does feel like the two powers and the two decision makers in this whole thing. Well, I guess ESPN's involved too, but it's like the Big Ten, the SEC, they're not on the same page. Then we're just going to keep pushing 12 teams continuing down the road, you know?
My gut says they don't cave. And I think what will be interesting is, will Fox stop making news or stop making noise? Because I've also wondered if this is all tied into the NFL. And if Fox knows, you know, let's say that the reports, I think the reports are true, but let's say the implication of the reports are true, that Rupert Murdoch meets with Trump and wants Trump to start looking into the NFL because he's trying to get the price of the NFL down. Well, that didn't appear to be very successful. I mean, I guess there's still time, but it doesn't seem like it's really particularly going anywhere because it seemed very half-hearted at best. So let's say Fox loses the NFL because they're probably going to have the smallest checkbook of the people that are going to be bidding. And let's say that they lose the NFL. Is the reason why they're making so much noise is they're preparing to lose the NFL. Because right now they have a presence in college football, but it's a smaller presence. And are they just pivoting from having basically half of the NFL to having half of what matters in college football?
I mean, I would argue they have more than a small presence in football, college football. I mean, they have the biggest, top three biggest game every weekend.
I mean, they have the biggest game of the Big Ten, which to me is like, so they basically would have the NFC package.
Sure.
But like,
and they have Big 12, which.
But I mean, like, those are not adding to the bottom line.
No, I know. It's all about the Big Ten.
That's inventory. And I mean, it's all about the Big Ten, but you could really make the argument it's really all about Ohio State and Michigan games.
Well, that's why Big Noon kickoff on like September 19th is Ohio State versus Buffalo.
Well, it is hilarious to watch Ohio State fans complain that whenever we play an SEC team, we'll play them at noon at our place, and then they'll get a night game. It's like, that's
on you.
That's
what you
literally what you wrote the rules. The reason why they programmed it was that,
like they their whole mantra is bringing back noon football, right? Like Big Noon. That's the whole thing. Like they don't want it to be in prime time.
The way college football used to be. My gut says, like, nothing really changes.
By the way, it is interesting when you think about the deal the Big Ten cut. I think already NBC is having buyer's remorse.
I know CBS is.
And they get the number two pick. NBC is like, cool, we get Iowa Northwestern.
Well, I mean, NBC might. This is also where, when people go like, "Why are you
There's
so bummed out about
Notre
it?
Dame is in four primetime games on NBC this year?"
Well, I think about it this way. I don't trust these television executives. Did you see what NBC tried to do with the Big Ten championship game?
Well, didn't they sell it back to Fox?
Here's exactly what they thought. These geniuses from the, hey, from the creators of playing through during a major championship comes their latest idea. They didn't even know that legally they didn't have the rights to sell it. What they were sitting there going is, all right, we've got this Big Ten championship game. Let's go get Amazon on the horn. Let's get somebody on the horn and let's sell it. They didn't even know they didn't have the right to sell it because all that happens is Fox owns it and is sublicensing the right to NBC to show the game. So, therefore, if they're going to sell it, they have to sell it back to Fox. If you did the math, they essentially bought it for $75 million and then they sold it back to Fox for $50. What a great deal. A loss of $25 million. But hey, they kicked in a couple more regular season games. That was the sweetener. To your point, enjoy another Northwestern. Let's say the bump it up Iowa game, maybe.
Yeah.
Jeez. Played at Wrigley. All right, let's talk a little NFL as well as the games of the night. Let's talk about it next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. According to Matt Foster, sports reporter at KSHB in Kansas City, Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice violated the probation after testing positive for marijuana and has been ordered to serve 30 days in jail. He was booked this afternoon in Dallas County, Texas, and will be released from custody on June 16th. The timeline means that he'll miss OTAs and minicamp. Will he miss more? It is funny how the Chiefs are like the new, like when you and I were growing up, they're the new Bengals, except they win more.
Yeah, I was going to say they do. They win a lot more and they have Mahomes. Will he miss more? I could see the NFL stepping in and dropping a little
personal conduct policy.
Yeah. Did he get, he got suspended. Remind me, what was he suspended?
I want to say it was, so remember they originally played him while the legal process played out. Right. Then he did he tear his ACL? He tore, either broke his leg, tore his ACL. He got hurt. And then all of a sudden they started negotiating with the NFL that he was going to serve that punishment. And I want to say he missed 8 games last year, 9 maybe.
Played total of 8 games last year.
So I want to say he was suspended for 8.
He took a 6-game suspension. Then he missed the tail end of last season with concussion symptoms.
Well, they were also, they packed it up.
Yeah.
After Mahomes lost.
They packed it in.
I could see a game or two coming.
Feels like they're going to have to do something, right?
However, now that he's not a massive name, but they do open up the season Monday Night Football at home.
I think all they care about is whether or not Mahomes plays.
So, when the Chiefs schedule came out, did you think it was an indication that Mahomes will be ready for week one?
Yes.
Or was it, hey, after the Broncos game, it's Colts, Dolphins, Raiders, bye week? It's almost like, we think he's going to play, we'll give you Monday Night Football. But if he doesn't, we'll give you an early bye so he's ready to go, and the Dolphins and Raiders in weeks 3 and 4.
I can buy that was a trying to middle it. I can buy,
because they do have back-to-back primetime games to start the year. Because they have Monday Night Football, then Sunday Night Football, at home.
I could buy that they're trying to middle it, but there were also reports from a couple of weeks ago that the league was in contact with the Chiefs over the status of Patrick Mahomes. And yeah, reports that, like, he's going to be a part of OTAs and minicamp. Now, I never know on those. Like, sometimes do they just go along with it, like, because the athlete says, I'm going to be ready to go, and they go along with it because, well, what else are we going to do? I don't know. Like, does the Chiefs, I think it is, I think it is highly likely that the Chiefs medical staff was very much in contact with the league.
I would agree with that. I think the reality is that this scheduling situation is a pretty clear indicator they believe he's going to play.
Now, it doesn't mean he can't. Doesn't mean he can't have setbacks. Doesn't mean that something else could happen. But I think that was the indicator. All right. I was also wondering. This was the other NFL thing I was thinking about. So, did you see the video that the JSN posted yesterday?
Yeah, the Defensive Player of the Year award.
How does that happen? You're the NFL. You're everyone's, every sports league in the world dreams of being you. And you can't get a freaking trophy right on your own NFL honors? Like, how does that happen?
I don't know. I don't know at all.
I mean, right, the only way, because correct me if I'm wrong, the video that I saw, it had his name at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means somebody, like, if you're going to tell me they were going to misspell something, his name.
Does he get to keep both?
My thing is, like, you know, with JSN going, it's disrespectful. Like, I'm just sitting there going, like,
I think it's hilarious.
It's sad. Like, does that mean, like, we're just sending the NFL honor awards? Like, we can't even get them engraved here? Like, are they just coming from a, are they just shipping them in from China?
That is a similar moment. I'll send you it.
But like the NFL, which is trying, they try to spoon and force feed us the NFL honors. They can't even do that right.
It's also kind of a lame award. God, college football has so many better trophies. Look at that thing.
Well, Goodell's just waiting until he can get it sponsored.
I mean, look at that. That's your award for Offensive Player of the Year? I mean, the Ray Guy Award's a lot cooler than that, and it's a punter.
But most of the college football awards are older with history.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, like, the history of them is, like, it was all these foundations that took great pride in their award. Probably too much pride, but nonetheless, they took great pride in it. And the NFL, it's just, like, it's just a television show. Okay, you said you wanted to ask me about Tirico from last night.
Yeah, so I was noticing there was a lot of unhappiness with the NBC broadcast. I caught the very tail end when I was driving home, so I wasn't really watching. I was just listening. What was the gripe?
So I did not see any Tirico-specific gripes.
Okay, it was more about the just presentation?
So there were a couple of things I would say. Number one, they had audio issues. It was kind of cutting in and out, and that did not seem to be, oh, just my television. That seemed to be a problem. Two, they have a weird setup with Reggie and Jamal Mashburn. Jamal Crawford. What's Mash on? Is he Prime? Don't we have Mash somewhere?
Yeah, he does. I thought he did like TNT college basketball stuff.
So I noticed that Crawford would go minutes without saying anything. Now, I don't know if that was everyone's complaint, but I did notice, like, as I was watching, because I was not just scrolling the Everything app, I took note of they did not have the chemistry down. And, like, it also felt like there was a point where you hadn't heard anything from Crawford, and then Reggie kind of invited him in, but also Reggie, like, invited him in during the play, and that didn't work. And then it felt like, honestly, and this was honestly for the best, it felt like later on as the game drug on, Tirico was just like, I got this, boys. I'm driving the bus.
I'm cool with Yeah, when I listened to it on my ride home, it felt like, why do we need Jamal Crawford here?
Yes, I would say, or why do we need Reggie? We only need one of them. Now, I would argue Reggie's had bigger games. I know he is, I don't even know if he's polarizing. I think he's probably one of the most disliked commentators, but he clearly seems to have a great relationship with the league, and he's never getting bumped. But they definitely do not need a three-person booth.
I'm not anti-Reggie. I think he's fine. I mean, I've always, and I'm happy that he's gotten the ascension. I've always been pro-Legler. I always just thought his breakdowns were awesome, and he's doing a really good job now. I think the thing that kind of turned me off last year, and I get it, man, you're a Pacers legend. But, like, Troy Aikman's a Cowboys legend.
And a Dolphins employee.
And a Dolphins employee.
Or maybe consultant.
I've never really thought that Aikman is too... I almost thought at times he was more critical of the Cowboys. I was kind of turned off last year in the playoffs. Just, like, how much he embraced the Pacers. I get it. You're a legend, and they're making this magical run, and Halliburton does the choke sign. But your job is to be the commentator. If your network doesn't have the rights, go for it, man. Like, I don't care. But he was broadcasting the game, and I thought last year was like, I don't know. That wasn't really for me. As for last night, I don't know. I only watched overtime with the sound on. I was just curious what was going on because it seemed like early on people were really frustrated with NBC's broadcast.
I've been pretty happy with NBC's presentation. Like they'll
more
show
than
us.
That's just a nostalgia. Just like
no, like the, you know, like hey man, like they showed us the starting lineups. Like when yeah. like they set the scene really well. I guess I'm at the point where I don't even really realize the voiceover is AI. That guy, because you know he's long since left us, but they're still using the old one. But I'm talking more. I like their graphics.
Yep.
I mean, Tirico is the absolute best. Mm-hmm. I guess what I've always been confused by is why does the NBA? They seem to want it because they will not back away from it. The NBA seems very big on the three-person booth. And I don't get that.
How many three-person booths have worked other than Jackson and Van Gundy with Breen?
None of them so far.
Right.
I would actually argue this.
Who's Legler with? Legler's with RJ, right?
It's supposed to be, yeah, but he got sick last round or something along the line. So it ended up just being, I think, a two-man.
And they don't even, but, and yep. That's the thing. During the regular season, they don't do three-man, right? They do two-man.
I'm always confused on, you will see an ABC Sunday night or Saturday night with multiple, but no, not on ESPN. That to me seems 100% a league thing. Because I would argue this, how many three-person booths have ever worked?
You know, other than the obvious?
I mean,
were you not a big Breen, Van Gundy, Jackson guy?
So, Glasspiegel last night on Twitter put out, you know, I'm in the Breen's overrated camp.
He's not my favorite. I think he's solid.
I think he's very good, but I also think, like, the people that, like, it's the Knicks of it all that get, like, he's the greatest of all times. Like, no, he's not.
I mean,
he's good.
Like,
he's a very good broadcaster.
And at his peak, I would say his peak level, the bang, I do, when he gets excited, I think he hits, in my opinion, he delivers the moment.
But like, do I think he's even a better broadcaster than Kevin Harlan? No.
I think Harlan's unbelievable.
So, like, but like,
I just feel like Harlan's never been, had the right employer.
I don't, like, I'm trying to think of,
how would you rank your NBA guys right now? I mean, Tirico, I'll always put him at one, no matter, he could do, you know, Russian table tennis for Brendan Sorsby. I'll always have Tirico one. But, like, I think Ian Eagle and Harlan are kind of interchangeable. I think they're really good.
So we were talking about this last week. I have noticed the internet turning on Noah a little bit.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I like Noah. And that's, I mean, I'll say this. Ask my wife. I don't really like many young broadcasters. I'm like, this guy sucks. I could be better than him. I think Noah's pretty good.
I think he's very good. I just noticed the internet's turning on him. I told George, I want to know what Noah talks like. What does Noah sound like when he's talking to his friends?
Does it have the deep voice?
Yeah, like, does he do that?
Hey,
like,
how you doing?
Because we were talking about it while his dad has an announcer voice, when you hear his, like, casual speaking voice, it's not that different. It's just like the other one's just cranked up a bit. Whereas Noah has a phenomenal announcer voice, though. It's like, that is a different thing. The problem is, who is the best? So Stan Van's never going to have a premier seat ever again because he complains too much and the league's not going to want that. I think there's a real problem of who are the great NBA analysts. I agree with you on Legler, but I also would argue, like, Legler doesn't feel like he has the gravitas of, like,
no,
you know, the all-time I think he's a phenomenal broadcaster.
Well, and think about how long it took. I think, in my opinion, it took a push from Van Pelt and all of those hits that he did in the biggest moments post NBA Finals, whatever, that kind of made ESPN say, all right, fine, let's do some games. Oh, wow, you're really good. Okay.
Eric's weighed in. He says he talks the same.
Really?
Yeah.
Good to know.
So he was literally born with it.
Just walking around as a freshman at Syracuse. Hey, how you doing?
Well, if you're going to walk, if there's one campus to walk around with an announcer voice.
That's true.
That is the one.
And they'll let you know about it.
They will.
Speaking of Syracuse, we need to get Benetti on some NBA games.
We also, like, last night, I do not understand the hockey fans hating Sean McDonough.
Oh, he's so good.
He's great.
McDonough's in the Tirico category of table tennis, don't care, but put him on it. I think he's awesome.
You know who I do like? I think I mentioned this to you guys. Bob Wischusen calls a damn good hockey game.
Oh, yeah.
That's my guy. I love Bob.
Okay, Jets fan. Pipe down over there. But no, I do like Bob a lot. I've listened to a lot. I think I've heard Bob call just about everything.
I think the thing with hockey,
ACC noon game, I'm like, yeah, baby.
I think the thing with hockey fans is that they have set broadcast groups for the entire, like, pretty much per conference. So you end up hearing the same guys over and over again.
See, where I think people should be complaining about the hockey with ESPN is it's not the game.
No, it's not.
It's like the, you know.
I can't stand most of the intermissions.
But it's that. Like, yeah.
They're awful.
They are long.
But, like, it's just like TNT has figured out how to do the studio better.
100%. Absolutely.
But, like, in terms of the game, I'm not. McDonough seems awesome.
Is this a hot take? I like Amazon's studio squad.
No, we all like it.
It's great. Okay.
Because they don't try to be inside the NBA. I think they just kind of do what they...
No, I think that's the best part. I also think NBC's not figured it out either.
No, they have not.
They got a lot of cooks in the kitchen. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story. Actually, we'll let you go. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
That is Tim Murray. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next. Right here on Jeff Wright & Company. 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. I think I got to go with my running back. Did you see what Cam Scataboo said about his week one return?
What did he say this time?
When I play 17-plus games this year, it's going to be 300 carries for over 2,000 yards. Call it a shot.
Oh. All right, buddy.
No one has said he lacks confidence.
They may have said he lacks brain cells.
Correct.
But confidence.
But that might be
abundance.
Related. Again, I do not need my starting running back pondering the theory of relativity in his spare time.
So you're just trying to say the lower the IQ, the better, man.
I'm just saying, and I don't think you have to be a high IQ guy to find the hole.
What a guy.
He is exact. That is nice, like when people are like, don't judge a book by its cover. Nope. You can judge Cam Scataboo exactly by his cover. Like, he is exactly what you think he is.
You gave me one try at what position.
Correct.
We got it.
Yeah. Well, the only other guess would have been fullback. Like, you're like, oh, he's playing up back.
Same difference.
My thanks to Tim Murray and Eric Hastein for joining the program today. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show coming up next.